Okay, so welcome back. You're listening to No One Is Illegal Radio on CKLN 88.1 FM, Word of Mouth News. We now go to our feature interview with Karine Baki, who joins us in the studio. Karine is a lawyer with the South Asian Legal Clinic of Ontario, SALCO, and a member of No One Is Illegal Toronto. She joins us today to discuss a recent statement that was released by No One Is Illegal Toronto called In Defense of Human Smuggling, which is about the growing movement against an anti-migrant legislation that was proposed by the federal government. Welcome to the show, Karine.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Karine. So we've talked a lot about on this show about the proposed Bill C-49, the legislation that the Conservative government is trying to push through. But for the sake of our listeners who may not be aware or are just getting aware of the legislation, can you explain a bit about it?
Yeah, well, I'd say C-49 is sort of like the latest in a series of bills in the last couple of years aimed at really strengthening border policing and border control in Canada. And not to the extent, I'd say, of shutting the borders entirely, but to make sure that the vast majority of migrants that come to Canada are in increasingly precarious and vulnerable positions. And the way that this bill is particularly doing that or aiming to do that is essentially by calling for essentially giving the minister even more unilateral power to kind of envision what, in the government's perspective, Canada should look like and who should be excluded. And in this sense, it's directly targeting refugees and is in direct response to the arrival of the MV Sunsi that came this summer, the Tamil migrants on MV Sunsi and previously on the Ocean Lady. And in terms of the sort of unilateral decision-making power that it grants the minister here, it's to basically enable the minister to designate any, like, quote-unquote irregular arrival, so arrival without official permission, so to speak, as a smuggling incident, and then automatically result in mandatory 1-year detention of those migrants, as well as a host of other restrictions in terms of being able to, live with any kind of dignity and protections.
Mm-hmm. And also we've talked a lot about on the show about how this trend that has been increasing over the last 15 years of how Canada has increasingly made its immigration more temporary, where people are brought in on temporary basis and not allowed the opportunity to stay, right, and create a sort of precarious labor force. Do you see Bill C-49 as an extension of that same trend?
Exactly, precisely, because the trend is all essentially to make as vulnerable as possible the majority of migrants coming, right? And this is because then they become more attractive to labor exploitation, to not being able to actually exercise adequate protections in housing and healthcare and so on and so forth, right? So in this sense, what this bill does, it removes the, further removes possibilities for permanent settlement. Presumably, most of those people will actually be denied any sort of refugee protection to begin with, right? As we've already seen since, with respect to Tamil refugees anyway, like historically, over the last, number of years, the sort of acceptance rate, so to speak, by the Immigration Refugee Board have been over 80%. And since the Sunsi has arrived, it's actually less than something like 40-something percent, right? So one, it's basically to refuse, expel more people. And then, again, because the other implication of this bill, what it's proposing is that even if someone is determined to be a convention refugee, they cannot unite with their families for a period of 5 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, essentially is as soon as someone is granted refugee status, they can apply to have all their dependents come, right? So it's like, yeah, for sure.
And in your work with the South Asian Legal Clinic of Ontario, you probably deal with a lot of clients who are facing repercussions of legislations like these. Mm-hmm. What have some of the responses been of community members to this legislation? And also, can you tell us a bit about the status of this legislation?
Yeah, well, in terms of the opposition, luckily there has been, I'd say, like a pretty broad-based opposition because the proposals are so egregious and so draconian. But so we've seen resistance from, everyone from grassroots groups like Known as Legal that organizes on these kinds of things on a day-to-day basis to sort of more established NGOs all kind of vocally opposing the bill and lots of organizations in between. So there's been, what's been good is there's been actually vocal public opposition, a lot of political pressure being put on opposition parties. And so the status of it now is that it seems like at this stage anyway, the bill is sort of hopefully dead in the water because it hasn't actually been brought to vote. Parliament, of course, you know, Christmas holidays are right around the corner. And it seems like because all of the parties have actually said that they will, you know, vote the bill down, it, you know, it's not going to come, hopefully not come forward. But the problem, however, is all of the parties have also said that they will support some other kind of manipulation of a similar bill that is enforcement oriented, essentially.
Yeah, and that's kind of the rhetoric that we have heard, right? Like, people have said, or opposition parties have said, that yes, we don't want Bill C-49 because of its egregious conditions, but we do want stronger legislation around human smuggling, which has sort of prompted No One Is Illegal to release a statement that has said, that has come in defense of human smuggling. Could you elaborate a bit about what that actually means? What does it mean to be in defense of human smuggling?
Right. Well, I think ultimately it means to be, you know, for the free movement of people, essentially, right? So what this sort of statement in defense of human smuggling tries to do, obviously, is to show that, you know, smuggling is essentially a way to facilitate the movement that is otherwise made impossible by increasingly restrictive immigration policies that are built on historically keeping out poor people of color, essentially, from global South countries, right? So, and it also recognizes that the actual need for smuggling arises as a result of those kinds of policies. The other thing that it tries to do, or does, I think, quite successfully, is to really unpack how disingenuous the smuggling debate has been in the public arena, because smuggling, by definition itself, is a form of consensual, non-coercive facilitation of movement across borders, right? So it's, you know, there's a graphic in the statement that says, you know, remember the Underground Railroad, right? It was because there is no other way for people to reach sort of safety and opportunity than smuggling. Like, that's the reason why smugglers exist. So obviously, what's really disingenuous about it is there's like no actual mention of that, and it's kind of, the assumption is that by nature it's an exploitative act and not an act of necessity. So I think it tries to unpack that.
And my sort of next question was going to be about like, why is it important for us to defend the act of human smuggling? But I think you kind of touched upon that, right? Like, with this historical narrative of how Quakers and Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad and the historical importance of smuggling, and that it's always existed, I guess, in human history.
Well, yeah, I mean, as long as you have mass disparities of, like, wealth and access to resources throughout the world, you're always going to have migration, right? So the other thing, like, smuggling essentially is related directly to the right to free movement. And what's, you know, and this statement says that, you know, migration is one form of resistance to the displacement, destruction, and desperation that the forces of war, environmental havoc, and global capitalism produce across the world. So basically, I think why we need to defend it is precisely to defend against the sort of, you know, apartheid system of borders created throughout the world, obviously not just in Canada, but throughout the industrialized world, that are kind of like increasingly in concert with each other, essentially, to prevent not just like people from leaving where they're at and also people from actually entering, right? Mm-hmm. So we saw actually most recently where Canada was working with Thai government officials to prevent another boat of Tamil migrants who were, you know, probably en route to Canada, and prevent through coordination with Thai officials, right? So essentially to make, you know, then the Thai government is in an agent, acts as an agent of Canadian, you know, racist Canadian immigration policies, right?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of flows nicely too with the news that we reported earlier during the top of the show. It was about the death of 28 migrants from Iran, off the coast of Christmas Island. And they were from Iran and Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. But the Australian government has taken no responsibility and has put the blame on, quote, human smugglers. And I think we can see how Canada is doing similar things, right? So we can criticize those that are out there while forgetting that Canadian government itself is doing the very same things under different rhetoric, I suppose.
Exactly. Or really the same rhetoric, because all of the, you know, the ministers rhetoric has been this, like, these laws are being proposed under the cover of, you know, quote, human rights kind of thing. Like, this is to protect against the exploitation of vulnerable people, so mm-hmm. on and so forth, right? So it's really the same thing, and it's also not anything new. This has happened historically, and, you know, in Canada, you know, even a decade or two ago when the boat of Chinese migrants came, is very similar discourse. So it's convenient to lay the blame on the act of smuggling, on, you know, smugglers, so to speak, without taking any responsibility for the fact that it is Canada, Australia, so on and so forth, that creates this market to have to be smuggled, because it is impossible to actually come in any regular means, right? So, you know, when the government talks about people jumping the queue or so on and so forth, the reality is there is no refugee visa, right? And there's a whole system of visas to begin with to make sure that people from certain countries are not able to come come to Canada. And then Canada also has, in those visa offices, a host of immigration officers. They're called migration integrity officers, that make sure the number of visas that are actually granted are very, very limited, right? So it's sort of a part of the same plan. And it's interesting, too, because listening to the news that was being read at the top of the show about the Australia, refugees, that were on the boat going to Australia, is that, you know, a lot of them were Iraqi. And, of course, there's no consideration for the fact that Australia, like many other countries, were directly responsible in completely obliterating Iraq in the most recent invasion. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if it is looking like Bill C-49 will be defeated in Parliament, but what else do you think can we expect from the Conservative government, given that trend that they have sort of shown themselves capable of following and in its attempts to sort of criminalize refugees, right, and criminalize the movement of people, while it valorizes movement of capital. How can we fight this, given the conditions? How do we fight for the free movement of all and for status for all?
That's a loaded, big question. But I would say one thing that I think we have to start doing on a concerted effort, like in terms of all people that are, all organizations, people, communities that are resisting these changes, is really not just to ask for better, you know, not just to ask for better protections of refugees or temporary foreign workers or so on and so forth, but to actually make sure we challenge the very legitimacy of borders and border controls themselves. You know, that's one thing. What we are going to see for sure is more and more bills that are more sophisticated, like crafted in more sophisticated ways to get at the same thing. So even just in last month in November, the Kenny government introduced Bill C-56, which is the Prevention of the Trafficking, Abuse, and Exploitation of Vulnerable Immigrants Act, right? So it's, you know, billed as this anti-trafficking legislation. Same thing. It basically contains no specifics on how any kind of exploitation is supposed to be curtailed, but is a way to increase, again, the minister's power to determine who will be able to get in and who will not. But it does it by making sure, giving officers the authority to decide whether or not someone's work permit is valid, or if it was actually, it's a work permit that's sort of a cover for someone being trafficked into, usually into sexual slavery, so to speak, or any other kind of job against their will, essentially, right? So, but it that's what it is. It controls who will get the visa and who will not. And that's it, right? So I think what we need to continue to do is just make sure that the spin of any law is really challenged, and at the basis of that being an understanding for, in defense of people's free movement, recognizing why people have to move in the first place.
Absolutely, yeah. So I would encourage folks to keep following No One Is Illegal and the website to keep track of sort of movements of people to oppose legislations and to oppose this increasing trend towards criminalization of refugees and immigrants and migrants. But I think we are just about out of time, so thanks so much, Corinne, for joining us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Great. So you've been listening to No One Is Illegal Radio on CKLN 88.1 Word of Mouth News. We have OCAP Radio coming up next, so keep it locked.